This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Hello, everybody out there. This is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio. It is April 4th, and today is Maya Angelou's birthday. She was born in 1928. So if you ever have a chance, please read some of her poetry because it is absolutely beautiful and empowering. Also, it's National Burrito Day, so go have yourself a burrito and enjoy that. And it's always Thor's Day on Thursday, so we say hello to Chris Hemsworth wherever you are, and it's only three more weeks till we find out how the Avengers pull it off. So today we have on the show author Rhonda Gilmore. She spent most of her adult life in Germany, first as a soldier in the U.S. Army and then as a teacher in the Department of Defense school system. 2014, she returned to the U.S. to marry her high school sweetheart, and their new chapter brought them to Western Washington State, where she usually is found hunched over her keyboard plotting mayhem and murder with a dash of romance. She is with us today. She also loved listening to live blues and jazz, playing guitar with her musical family, and gobbling up tons of books. I've got her links to her website, Facebook, and Twitter up on the write-up of the show today. So welcome to the show, Ms. Rhonda Gilmore. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. By the way, my published works are under the pen name Sidira Stone.
Sidira, okay. So I will make sure we have that down. So tell me, when you were... So you're an officer in the military. You're a teacher.
No. Oh, goodness, no.
No?
I was a lowly enlisted girl.
Oh, there you go. Okay. You were a soldier in the military. Let me correct myself. Yes. Soldier in the military, became a teacher, and then how does this roll into writing? What was the catalyst that kind of brought you to this point now?
That's a funny story, because the first novel that I completed, which is as yet unpublished, was a cozy mystery. The title is Murder on Principle, and it involved the murder of a high school principal. We've all had that kind of boss, and I had great fun killing him on paper. And I do plan to self-pub that one, because I think at least the teachers who worked in that school system would get a big kick out of watching his demise. And some of them probably know exactly who I meant, too. It came from, we had in the teacher's lounge table, people would leave treats, usually baked goods. And one day I came in and asked, who brought the brownies? And nobody knew. They just dug in. And I said, you know, anyone could easily murder us all. Just put some poison brownies on the table, and the teachers would gobble it up. No question is asked. So that was the catalyst for the first story.
Wow. Well, you know, there was years ago, I used to work in ICU nursing, and a lot of times families would bring plates of treats, and I was actually in Dallas when there was a situation like that, and it turned out to be a jilted girlfriend situation where she was upset, at her boyfriend, who was one of the nurses in the unit, and she brought in goods, baked goods that she had laced with, like some, she worked in the lab, so she's like some horrid disease. It got everybody sick. So, people think, oh, that's crazy. Nobody would do that. It's like, oh,
Yeah, they would.
And then Sue Grafton did that, what you're talking about, when she started the ABC Mysteries. She, I remember going to a talk of hers years ago, and she talked about how she was going through a terrible divorce. And, of course, it was a situation of, like you're saying, wishing for someone's demise. And she started writing, and she said, by G, she was cured. She wasn't quite
marvelous.
So angry anymore.
That's great.
So you're writing the cozy mystery, and then you're thinking about that. And then where did now your book is quite spicy that you have under the Sidira Stone. So that's Sadira Stone, just like a stone. And so how do you go from the cozy mystery to the hot and spicy?
Interesting. So I was noodling around on the internet, which I spend far too much time doing, and somehow I ran into an article on some writer's forum about how fun and lucrative it can be to write erotica, So I read a couple articles, and then I ordered a couple of books. One of my favorites is Susie Bright's, let's see, I'm looking on my shelf. I think it's called How to Write a Dirty Story. It's delightful.
Yes.
And so I thought, well, you know, I'll just give it a try. I thought I would write a short story and submit it and have some fun, because I'd had some success with short stories that are horror. Change of genre, just as a palate refresher. And so I started writing this story about an indie bookshop, because, of course, bookshops are very sexy. And I picked a location, Eugene, Oregon, just kind of out of a hat, because lots of people have told me what a great college town that is. I'd never been. And and I imagined a collection of historical erotica. Well, it would have to be behind a closed door, I would think, to keep kids from wandering in there.
Okay.
And so
sure.
the idea grew, and it turned out it really wanted to be a full-length novel, not a short story. And I pitched it on a couple Twitter pitches and got a couple bites from small presses and ended up joining the RWA and meeting one of my chapter mates, the lovely Marie Tuhart, writes steamy and erotic romance for the Wild Rose Press. And she encouraged me to submit, and the rest is publishing history, minor as it is. They
there you go.
And book two's coming out soon, and I'm writing book three.
Oh, wonderful. So if you're not familiar, you're listening, RWA is Romance Writers of America, and then the Wild Rose Press is one of the presses that's been around quite some time. Is it for the Scarlet Rose line?
It is, yes. I'm a Scarlet woman.
Okay. Yes, yes. And they really do treat their authors beautifully well. And I love that you mentioned the book, the craft writing book, because a lot of times, you know, even if you're not a writer of erotica or even like steamy romance, it talks about building tension, sexual tension, and
mm-hmm.
you can have tension and do a closed-door setting or they don't do anything. But the tension,
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes that's the harder discussion when you're having your characters talking. Did you find that,
right,
or was it the actual, like, open-door scenes?
I love writing the sexy scenes. I'm not gonna be bashful about that. For me, pacing is my biggest challenge, because I'll just amuse myself with clever little scenes and dialogue with witty banter, and I'm having a great time. But the reader would like me to get to the point at some time. So that's definitely my challenge. And I do take courses, and I have shelves of craft books. And you're right, it's really important. But also reading the greats, the people who do it really well, and paying attention to how they achieve that marvelous tension.
Well, I mean, and people have asked me about this. It's like, so I guess you don't read what you write because aren't you afraid of lifting it from someone else? And
heck no.
I don't think that's the case.
No, not for me. Not for me.
Yeah, no, not for me either. But, I mean, people would ask, how do you keep it separate? Is it more of like, oh, that was very clever how they did that, and then that just kind of gets your brain spinning in a different direction?
Well, no, I try to be kind of systematic about it. I recently took a course sponsored by Romance Writers of America with Jen Bocall, whose books I haven't read, but I need to. She taught a wonderful course on writing sex scenes, and she showed us how to break it down, highlighting in different colors, kind of similar to what the great writing teacher Margie Lawson does. So you highlight all the action in one color and all the dialogue in one color and all the description and so on to see how they do it. And what I noticed, for example, in this most recent exercise in both my open door love scene and some of the ones that I studied, was that there wasn't a lot of talking, which, if you think about it, makes sense, right?
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Weaving in the emotion and the description, and I think it was a scene from Tessa Dare that I dissected for that exercise, and it was hard to decide which color to highlight some things, because she does such an amazing job of weaving together description and emotion and action. And so, yeah, I just try to emulate that style. But she writes historical, so, you know, there's no question of me lifting.
Right.
Nobody's wearing, you know, great skirts and pantaloons in my stories. because I write contemporary.
Right.
But, yeah. I get why some
authors
don't.
Well, I guess they could if you had a costume party at the bookstore.
There's a thought. Maybe I'll have to do that, right? Yeah. I understand
maybe.
Why some authors worry about unintentional plagiarism, but I have a memory like a sieve. I'm not going to remember enough detail from anybody's scene to actually plagiarize it.
Yeah. Right. And you know, we all want our works to be, you know, cherished for what they are. And so I think very mindful writers make it a point not to do those things. They make it a point
Absolutely.
To, of course, respect the work of someone else, because it is a lot of work to sit down and come up with those words.
So much.
So you said you have book one is out, and that is called Through the Red Door and the Book Nirvana Series 1. And then you said you've already got book 2 written and you're working on book 3. So tell me about book 2.
Book 2 is called Runaway Love Story. I just got the cover last week from my cover artist, Ray Monet, and she did such a good job. It's about, I have to be careful here not to spoil book 1. So book 1 involves two suitors for a widowed bookseller. And book 2 involves the one who wasn't chosen. They're both great guys. You know, some love triangles involve somebody who's, you know, the dastardly guy over here. But these are both wonderful guys. And so the fellow who wasn't chosen pairs up with a new employee at the bookshop, Laurel. He's a runner, she's a runner. So it's a runaway love story in that sense. They meet on the running trail when she's being harassed by a group of teens, and he steps in pretending to be her boyfriend. He's a very large fellow and takes care of the problem. He's a teacher, and she is temporarily in Eugene, Oregon, to help her great aunt Maxie, my favorite character ever. Great aunt Maxie is an artist. She's 90. She's moving into assisted living, and she's the only person in Laurel's family who's ever appreciated her artistic ambitions. Laurel comes from a small town and has a lot of family pressure to live a very ordinary, respectable life, but that's not what she wants. So Laurel meets this marvelous guy, but she's only in town for a short time. She's on her way to San Francisco, where she, another glamorous gallery job awaits her. And she ends up creating a poster for this running club that they both belong to.
Okay.
And it becomes a runaway hit on social media, especially when somebody snaps some pictures of the guy on the poster, our hero, and the woman who created the poster together smooching. And so, of course, the social media viral story takes off just as they break up. So they have to deal with that as well. Well, I had a lot of fun writing it.
Wow.
Really love both the characters. And I have since been to Eugene and you know, plodded along these wonderful running trails that they have. Where the story takes place.
That sounds wonderful. I had a roommate in high school that was from Corvallis, Oregon, and I cannot remember where that is. But she talked
a lot
about.
Not very far from Eugene.
Yeah, she talked a lot about it. It was very interesting to see her because she was very, very smart. But she had grown up in Corvallis, and we're at the University of Texas, which basically the population of the university is the same as the town she was from. So needless to say, there was definite adjustment for her. But she spoke wonderfully of back west. So it was very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got book two, you're doing the running, and then book three, you said are you plotting it now or are you writing it now? Or both.
I'm writing it now. It involves Margot, who is a 22-year-old. She's a senior at the University of Oregon in graphic design and getting ready to graduate. I had fun interviewing a couple of young ladies here in Tacoma who are graphic designers, and they gave me lots and lots of insights because I'd already established that's what she's doing. So now making her the heroine of book three, I had to learn a lot more. And she ends up with being pursued by a guy we meet in book two, Elmer. I love his name. He's 26 and buff and burly and tattooed and has a big ginger beard. He works in a brewery, but his dream is to be a ceramics artist. And so both of these characters are in kind of the same place. They are aspiring artists, young, starting out, sorely in need of funds, and they find themselves competing for the same art grant, which is which is created by one of the characters we meet in book two, an older lady who's a very successful artist and wants to pay it forward. So yeah, they're in a tough situation, and it's a lot of fun. They're great characters.
I mean, how fun to have that layered, because as you're writing, did you know you were going to have this character was book two, this character was book three, or did some of your characters just kind of happen as you went along, like the great Aunt Maxie? Did you envision her being through the series, or was it someone that just kind of showed up when you were writing?
She just kind of showed up. I needed a reason to bring Laurel into town temporarily. And so Aunt Maxie's kind of an amalgamation of several fascinating older artistic ladies I've known and a photo that I found online. You know, have you heard of the website Advanced Style? This guy snaps photos of, he's published books of photos of these wonderfully flamboyant, eccentric ladies who wear outlandish styles. And so Maxie has bright red hennaed hair that's like baby duck down that stands up in every direction. And she's tiny, and she wears wild, colorful outfits. And she's kind of an adopted grandmother to a whole group of young artists in Eugene. And she's just a marvelous person. So, yeah, she just kind of grew. I had a role, and she grew into it. She introduced herself. And the same with Elmer. Elmer, the hero of book three, I needed some other guy to be competing for Laurel's attention in book two. And he introduced himself, and he was so much fun that I just wanted to give him his own story.
Is that the feedback you've gotten from readers? Is what about so-and-so? And you can say, oh, they're in book two or book three. Is that the kind of feedback you've been getting?
Kind of. One of the reviewers who was only lukewarm on the first book overall, but he loved Margot, the character who's the young shop assistant, and she's kind of I describe her as Tinkerbell on a Harley. She's a tiny little thing. She's got spiky blonde hair and lots of piercings and tattoos, and she knows what she wants and where she's going, very determined and a little prickly in her personality. He liked her. And, she's the heroine of book three.
It's always funny, I find, that when I wrote my very first book, I was thinking, okay, good, I wrapped up, you know, what I needed to. And I had a friend come up to me and say, what about this character? And I said, what about that character? Well, you can't leave them out there. You've got to fix it. And it's funny how invested people get in these stories. And as a writer, you feel wonderfully complimented because they're invested. But to have that feedback is wonderful. So I'm so glad that somebody mentioned your character and said, well, what about this person? So that's cool. And you're giving her story.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and you know, that's a popular format for romance is people like a series. And so if you have a family or a group of friends or a business like a bookshop where you can draw on multiple characters that are connected somehow, that's great.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people think, well, I'll write one book and see what happens. But I think if you really want to continue in the business, if you want to keep writing and you're truly wanting to storytell, thinking of, like you're saying, a group of friends, a common thread, family, that people want to be invested in for years to come, hopefully. So, So when you were first starting, do you recall the first thing you wrote, like not papers in school or anything like that, but like you sat down and wrote your first story? Do you remember what it was?
I do. I was in my 20s, and I was a brand new French teacher in a U.S. high school on an army base in Germany, and didn't look much older than the kids. And there was this young man in my class, he was probably a senior. He was one of my favorites, but I didn't realize that he was kind of emotionally unstable. And one day he blew up in class. This is a big, strong young man of maybe 17, and he was yelling and throwing things and had to get the office staff to come take him out of the room. And it really shook me. And so after school, I'm sitting there alone at my desk still quaking, and I pulled up a fresh document and started writing a story in which that happened. And the young teacher grabbed, I don't know if you're familiar with these, the really heavy three-hole punch that has a handle, like you might see in a classroom.
Yes.
And brained him with it in self-defense. And then what does she do with the body? And so it was very therapeutic. I wasn't shaking anymore by the time I left that evening. And I still haven't finished that story because I'm still not entirely sure what she does with the body. But I envisioned a trail.
Right.
She stuffed it into a locker and then came back on the weekend to dispose of it and saw a trail of ants leading away from the locker because somebody moved the body. And I don't know. I'll finish that story someday.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's therapy. I started with murder.
Well, I think that's what's fun about being in a writer's group because, and people who've heard my show before, they've heard the story, but there's a lovely group of ladies called the Sisters in Crime here in Texas, and they
yes.
get together and they write. And one of the ladies was saying she couldn't wait to go on a second honeymoon with her husband to Italy because they were going to a castle, and she couldn't wait to get there so she could go to the top on stand on the roof and see how hard she would have to push someone and where they would land on the sidewalk. And so
That's
all her
marvelous.
Friends, instead of thinking, should we call someone? Are you okay? Were saying things like, okay, so are you going to run and push them? How tall is the ledge? Are they going to be, you know? And it's kind of nice to not have to worry about, of course, the police showing up.
That's great.
But to know... Yeah, to know that there's someone that gets why you're writing this, and it's you don't want to necessarily write about unicorns and rainbows all the time, because you know sometimes it is what you're saying, it's therapeutic to write about things
very,
that are dark and scary. So you've got these coming up. Will you be writing any mysteries in the future, you think?
Yes, I have. I started a series that takes place in a fictional Northern California town near Mendocino. And it's kind of an artist colony. Can you tell I'm always writing about artists? And
I love that,
sorts.
Though. It's very visual.
Well, I love creative people of all kinds. I have a very musical family. I have friends who do various kinds of visual arts. I just find those kinds of people fascinating. And so the first book that I wrote was kind of sort of women's fiction. It was about a woman able to take early retirement and beginning a new chapter in her life as a writer and an artist, and then her daughter boomerangs back home. So I had a lot of fun with it, but it's really kind of all over the place as far as trying to slot it into a genre. Then I wrote book two in the series, and Lola, the protagonist, red-haired belly dancing lady in her 50s, she becomes an amateur sleuth in that one. And that one did really well. I finaled in last year's Daphne du Maurier competition, which is an RWA competition for romantic suspense. So now what I need to do is go back and recast book one as a cozy mystery. That's a genre I really enjoy reading, and it's a lot of fun to write. And, yes, I need to rejoin Sisters in Crime. I was a member some years ago. And I already know I have book three sketched out, so that'll be a three-book series of cozy mysteries, and who knows, maybe Lola and her guy will continue to solve crimes in that town.
That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So tell me, who are some of your favorite mystery writers?
Oh, well, Sue Grafton, for sure, and Janet Ivanovich, and let's see, Ruth Rendell. Her stuff is very, very dark. And, of course, the great Agatha Christie. P.D. James. Yeah, those are the ones that come to mind right now. But I really enjoy that kind of rom-com isn't the right word, but lighter, funny cast of characters, violence off the page. I tried to read Patricia Cornwall's books, and they're marvelously written, but they're just too dark and gory for me. I just don't want to spend, you know, 300, 400 pages worth of time with some horrible, you know, killing machine lurking just around the corner. It's just too stressful for me. Well, that's just a personal preference, but I do love a good cozy.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like I've watched the show movie Red several times and then Red 2, of course, and it's just, it's, I mean, it is. It's violent. There's a lot of bad things happening, but you can't help but laugh at some of it because it's so, the way it's presented, even though it's dark, it's like you're talking about, it's more light and rom-com-y, I guess.
So
those kind of things are actually pretty fun.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of J.A. Jantz. And hers are, they're not really on the very, very dark side, but more police procedural. And she has such well-rounded characters and series characters. And she lives up near us half the year anyway. She's up in Bellevue near Seattle. So I've had the chance to hear her speak several times. What a marvelous storyteller. She is so funny in person. She's great.
Oh, I love that. I love when you get to meet the author, too. That's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so tell me, when you were young, did you want to write, always write, or was this just something that came about later?
It's, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. I started the way probably a lot of kids get into writing in that I was writing fan fiction. We didn't call it back then in the 70s when I was growing up, but I would take characters from a TV show I loved, like Batman or Star Trek, and create all these adventures for them that usually had involved introducing some audacious female character, and it usually involved a romantic thread. And so there are a lot of doodles in the margins of my school notebooks. And yeah, I would just, for me, I never shared them, write these stories. And today that's a thing. That's a genre with eager readers on places like Wattpad and such. So people are really into the fanfic. But I wasn't aware of it back then. And so that's how I got started.
Well, that's funny that you say that, because I met a woman this morning that said she used to do the same thing, but like for the show Happy Days or those, and she'd say, I don't like how that scene played out. I'm going to go rewrite it.
Yeah.
So, and we were laughing. It's like, that's fan fiction. That's like, that's pre-fan fiction.
Yeah.
But I remember doing the
same.
We
didn't know what to call
it. Oh, this is how I would write this. Yeah.
Yep. What were your favorite shows to rewrite?
Oh, gosh. Well, Charlie's Angels, of course, because I would be on it. And then,
yes.
I love that. And then Jacqueline Smith is absolutely my favorite. And then, let's see, what else? That show Heart to Heart, did you ever watch that show? With Stephanie Powers and Robert Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much dating myself. Of course, I always watch Dallas. That was Fridays. And then Dukes of Hazzard was another one I watched.
Uh-huh.
And
that was a funny show.
Let's see. Yes. And then in the 80s, I was in my teens, and so I watched more soap opera-y stuff. And and then, of course, I earned my degree, and I've got to work now, so I don't watch as much. But and then Friends was happening. And I watched Friends and ER and all that.
Yes.
Fabulous TV in the early 90s. Yeah. So it's fun to watch. It's fun to go back and look at it and go, oh, yeah, I remember this one. So it all works out. So we've got about two minutes left. So what do you have, any events coming up or any book signings coming up?
No, not yet. I'm looking to set something up at a marvelous local bookstore in Tacoma that does a lot for authors and readers groups called King's Books, and I need to pitch them still, a multi-author romance event for next February for around Valentine's Day. I'd like to do that.
Wonderful.
But
and what was the local bookstore's name again?
It's called King's Books. So anybody listening in the Tacoma area probably already knows it. It's a marvelous. They have new and used books. They do book arts fairs. They have dozens of readers groups, from banned books to LGBTQ, I'm sorry if I got that wrong, plus readers groups, to a vegan book club, to a haiku writers club, to, oh my gosh, just so many. They're really active in the community.
And it sounds like a wonderful group of artists, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so, so much for coming on and talking to us today. And we will look forward to your next book. When is the second book supposed to come out?
It will be this spring. I don't have a release date yet, but we're just waiting on the final galleys. So it will be this spring of 19. Runaway
Wonderful.
Love story.
Runaway Love Story. So if you're listening, this was Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio talking to author Rhonda Gilmore. You can find her on her website, Facebook, Twitter, and then her pen name she writes under Sadira Stone, S-A-D-I-R-A Stone. And you can find her book on Amazon, Through the Red Door. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you kindly, Patricia. It was a pleasure.
Have a great one.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.